Welcome back to the Bloom Daddy Experience here on News Radio 1170 WWVA. Now, if you're like myself and Otis growing up here in the Ohio Valley, we've always heard about the Palace of Gold or Neuvendobben. And joining us now, we have a special guest. His name is Henry Doktorski. He lived at Neuvendobben for 16 years. Good morning, sir. Thank you so much for coming on with us this morning.
Well, good morning, Sam and Otis. It's really a treat to speak with you.
Yes, this is wonderful. It's always fascinating me. Like I said, growing up here in the Ohio Valley, it's one of those places that you always heard about. And I've actually had the opportunity to tour the Palace of Gold. But for our listeners who are not exactly familiar with the Hare Krishna faith, could you give us like a quick little insight into what that faith entails?
Yeah, of course. And speaking of the palace, we call it Prabhupada's Palace of Gold. It is, at one time, was the second best tourist attraction in Marshall County, if not the state of West Virginia, mm-hmm. back soon after it was dedicated in 1979. And I did help build it in the construction. But you did ask about the principles of the Hare Krishna. It's actually an offshoot of an older religion called Gaudiya Vaishnavism. It's a type of Hinduism where it's a monotheistic group where there is a supreme God. A lot of Hindus believe in like a white light or mm-hmm. Brahman, they might call it, but the Krishnas, they believe that God is a person, and his name is Krishna, and he appeared like 5,000 some years ago on the earth, and it's really some beautiful, beautiful stories, in the scriptures about Krishna. But basically, they chant Hare Krishna. It's the Maha Mantra. It's Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. A mantra, the Sanskrit word mantra can be defined as something to free the mind. And Swami Prabhupada, who brought Gaudiya Vaishnavism from India to the United States back in 1965, 1966, he claimed that chanting this mantra cleanses the mind of dirty things, which in the Krishna context would mean desire for fame, profit, adoration, sense gratification, and they do follow four regulative principles, prohibitions. They don't eat any meat, fish, or eggs. They don't engage in illicit sexual activities, and illicit means illicit sex is with one's wife once a month for the purpose of procreation. They don't gamble, and they don't, meat eating? Oh, yeah, intoxication, including drinks like coffee and tea, which contain caffeine.
Sure.
So, I could talk a lot more about the principles,
yeah.
but that's, I say in a nutshell, that's the important parts.
So you found yourself here in West Virginia, leading you to the Krishna faith. This was in 1978, roughly. Had you heard of the Hare Krishnas before then?
Yes. Actually, back in 1972, what was I? 72, I was like 16 years old. I played in a rock band in high school, and we played George Harrison's My Sweet Lord, and I got bought myself a 45 RPM record of that from Apple Records at the record store, and I would listen to it very carefully, and there were some very unfamiliar words that the singers were chanting, such as Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, you know, Guru mm-hmm. Deva, and I remember listening to that many times, and even called my mother over. I said, "Do you know what these words are?" She had no idea. And then, it was like, you know. So the Krishnas believe that just by hearing this mantra, you start your spiritual journey back to Krishna. So, So that was, to my memory, the first time I was ever heard the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But I didn't know about the devotees of Krishna till some years later. I was a senior in college, and I was auditioning as a piano major at Eastman School of Music. I was studying in Kansas City, but my flight from Rochester to Chicago and then back to Kansas City was delayed overnight because of a huge snowstorm in Kansas City. And while I was stuck at the airport, there were two Krishna devotees working the airport, you know, selling books for donations and pinning flowers on people's lapels. And
that was typical, correct? That was a typical sight.
Yes, back in those days, that was, you know, that was a big part of their money making and preaching book distribution tactics. Anyway, this lady, a young lady, I was 20, 22 years old, wearing a business suit, long hair. My hair was like past my shoulders. I was never a hippie, but I kind of liked, you know, that kind of idea and stuff like that. But anyway, so she pins this, she just appears out of nowhere, pins this carnation on me. We're standing in the crowd. And she asked for a donation. I said, I don't have any money. I'm a college student. And she said this and said this, and I kept saying, no, no. And finally she said, well, but it's good to give to God. And I thought, yeah, I guess. Okay. So I gave her $1. And then she disappeared, you know, because most of the pickers, we call them pickers, people who are collecting, raising funds for the Krishnas, most of them had quotas. And, you know, the faster you get your quota, the more time you have to hang, relax afterwards. Mm. So she disappeared in the crowd. And I had to wait several hours at that airport to get, you know, they were giving us hotel vouchers. And, you know, when are we going to get back on the plane the next day? And I needed that info. So I was just hanging out at the airport with nothing to do. And I thought, let me find this lady. I want to ask her some questions about her religion. And I saw her at some distance, and I kind of waved to get her attention. And then she like ran away, you know, through the crowd. She thought I wanted my dollar back, you know.
But that's how you learned. Yeah, you learned about it.
Yeah, you know, and then I saw her up on the second level, and I waved again, and I ran up the escalator, and then she disappeared again. And maybe an hour later, I was sitting on a seat, and this young man with a wig, and I could see he's wearing a wig. You know, the Krishnas, the men shave their heads except for a ponytail in the back. But he's wearing a wig, you know, to help disguise them. In fact, I did that for years when I was, you know, a fundraiser also. And he puts his book in my lap, a big book, you know, hardcover book, probably a Srimad Bhagavatam, one of Swami Prabhupada's books. And he starts reciting this line. And I could tell it was just a memorized rote line, you know, these. He wasn't experienced, you know, book distributor, but he's just starting out. And I interrupted him a few times trying to find out what was going on, and he couldn't handle it. And finally he said, oh, I got to, you know, he could see that he wasn't going to get me to give him a donation. So he, like, picked up his book and said, I got to get my quota, and ran off.
That was
my first introduction.
Your intro? Well, hold that thought, because if you would, we're going to jump to a quick break, but I want to continue this conversation because I want to get into a day in a life living at New Vrindavan and what it was like for you when you were at the location and all the things that went on there. So we're going to jump to a quick break. Of course, you're listening to the Bloom Daddy Experience here on News Radio 1170 WWVA.